You got into the safety business because you wanted to protect people. But somewhere along the way, the job started controlling your time, your schedule, your priorities, even your income potential. What if the expertise you've built over the years in the field can give you something more? More freedom, more control, more ownership of your future. I'm Sheldon Primus, the author of 7 Steps to Starting a Profitable Safety Consulting Business and the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast, with more than 350 episodes helping safety professionals become consultants and grow their career. Consulting changed my life. In fact, I'm a full-time RVer and one consulting contract paid for my home I live in today. Now, I help safety professionals build their own consulting practice through bi-weekly coaching calls, accountability, and personal guidance. But this program isn't for everyone. Start with the consultant readiness audit at sheldon.coach.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy, now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion, the book that started the conversation. Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the Signal. For the first time, all 3 books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition. This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live, inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the Signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.
Hey, everybody, it's Safety Wars for Tuesday, March 3rd. Welcome to the new season of Safety Wars. We re-signed for the next year. So I'm here for the next year to be a fly on the wall, to be that mosquito on your arm, to be the pain in the neck, as usual. And I'm very happy to be here to have this opportunity with Safety FM and Jay Allen. So we're there. You're going to notice some changes in the very near future here. I know I always say that, but we're going to see a lot of changes here. Over the weekend, look at what happened. Wow. War with Iran. They've been lining this stuff up for months, apparently, and planning this out. The official thing is, for the most part, the official thing is that the peace talks and the negotiations to disarm Iran with the nuclear weapons, potential nuclear weapons, future nuclear weapons, fell apart, and they were, like, stalling. So that's often a very, straighten out my hat here, that's often a very common strategy. That we're going to delay. How many times does that happen in our work areas, in our work sites, and everything else, where we are going out and we are delaying everything? Where, no, we delay this, we delay that. We delay, the next job will do that, or that's not important. And then at the end, often what happens is safety professional doesn't last till the next job. Or, that was the deal with the other job that you're not this job, and when you're dealing with the annual reviews, often, and I know I got caught up with this more than one time when my employer was giving an annual review, not any of the current contracts I service, but many, many years ago. Well, you know, this is what we have for you, Jim. We're going to go out there and we're going to do this. We're going to do that. And they don't do that. They don't do anything. They just, This is just to string you along for another while before you say something. Before, right? And this is how you lose safety people. Now, just the way it is, it's the employment situation. I know Jay Allen was talking about employment situations this morning where his former employer was playing games and everything else, made all different types of promises and everything else, and reneged on him. It was an absolute hellhole. You had to be part of the old boy network, what used to be called the old boy network, to be in there. And a lot of companies still do that with the old boy networks. But what's my point here? A lot of stuff going on. Let's talk about Iran. We can't do anything what our government is going to do over there. Agree with the administration, disagree with the administration, whatever else. The fact of the matter is, what can you do? You can be vigilant here on the home front, especially now that DHS has been defunded with that and with all the other shutdown, government shutdowns, you know, from last year. We know what that means. But I think it's kind of unbelievable that we have a government shutdown on the DHS front. We have this situation going on in the Middle East, and we have the screaming and yelling about sleeper cells for the last 30 years. I've heard about it since the mid-1990s, and I've probably heard about it from then. Before then, one of my classmates from my high school, his father was a diplomat in the 1980s. He said, and we were talking one day in one of our classes, and he says, well, our biggest threat is Iran. This is right after the hostage crisis, and nobody was really thinking about Iran, or Iran, right? And what ended up happening was 30 years later, look at the situation we have here with that. So, sleeper cells, what are they? They're basically people who are agents from another country that come into our country. They live here, and they're waiting, you know, sort of like what I always say about construction sites, right? They delay, and then they expect you to show up the next day, and they think that you're sitting down at the Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts drinking coffee and eating donuts waiting for a phone call. And this is sort of like it is with the sleeper cells. They're people who come in to this country, the United States being one of them, and then what happens? They integrate into society, and they're waiting for that phone call, waiting for that email, waiting for that signal, the right time to activate, and now you're going to have an now you have an issue. I guess the first time, now that I think of it, it was Invasion USA, Chuck Norris movie in the 1980s that was similar to this, right? Sleeper cells, they're going to be activated. And all through our history, seems like we've had something like this. You had the Red Scare in the 1950s. You had the House on Un-American Activities, House Committee on Un-American Activities. You had the Joe McCarthy era. And then what happened? And after the Soviet Union had collapsed, a lot of intelligence came out, a lot of documents. Turns out Joe McCarthy was largely right. Well, his way of going about things was debatable, but we remember he was more, and I remember seeing the filler article on the Venona papers in, of all places, in the New York Times. I was like, oh yeah, he was pretty much right on that. Now, my question is this. Are we, you're hearing about these sleeper cells, apparently people on FBI watch lists and everything else, are they really there, or is this something that was just made or made up to scare us, to manipulate us? We always go around on this road, out to manipulation. How are you being manipulated, whether it's in the workplace or in society as a whole? That's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to also discuss some of the OSHA news, EPA news. That's pretty extensive, and we'll see where we go from there. OSHA has a very significant update that we have to talk about, but it's easily remedied with a color printer. And that's where we are. Again, Safety Wars Tuesday, March 3rd of 2026. So we will be back in a minute.
Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
I had to change my title there. I've been the bad boy of safety for a while. Now I'm the all-around great guy. I'll be the first person to tell you that. A little bit of tongue-in-cheek there. Always be careful with people who say how smart they are, how experienced they are, right? And especially if they're trying to get one over on you. There's one guy I worked with and he was always telling me how smart he was and everything else. And after a while, it became a joke unto itself. There's always someone smarter. There's always someone more experienced. There's someone who's always more articulate. What happened to the music and everything else out there with that? Always. And that's one of the constants in the universe. And what ends up happening? He'll, and it's usually a him, not too often a woman, who will say, oh, you know, we'll remind you of how much smarter and better they are. Try to put you down and control you, and what's the word? Manipulate. Learning teams. Now, Safety FM has several things coming up this year. Conferences. We'll be going into. I want to do a short promo. I want to do this stuff. Give it some justice here. With that, one of them is with Brent Sutton in July. And you can check out safetyfm2.com to find out all about that. And learning teams. What do you think on one of my projects the talking point was today for the warning huddle? It was learning teams. Where we're rather than go by a document that was written and submitted by someone who does know, have never done the work before, and the work on one of my projects, no one's ever done before with this, like this. So what do you, so what are you going to do? You have to have a learning team. How are we going to do this? We're going to discuss this. And while we're doing it, we're going to discuss it again. And when we get done with it in the first couple of days, until we get to that Jens Rasmussen skills mode, we're going to have to figure out and learn how to do this job. All right, so Brent's breaks it down into three different types, if memory serves you right. Number one is a everyday learning team. That's your everyday audit. And then you have a like an accident response or incident or mishap response learning team. Something happens, hey, we're going to go and do a learning team on that and find out what. No, we're not going to do it. We're going to learn what happened. Less adversarial. Then the third type is the management of change learning team, where we have an update going on. We're updating our procedures, maybe from a regulation. Maybe it's just something we do, like every January I tell the people I work with, you got to revalidate all your safety plans and safety stuff and everything else, right? And no, you're not doing much. It's January, not much going on. And you got to do it or you figure things out. Don't assume you know. Right? The only assumption is that you have to go and learn. Now, a lot of EPA news and OSHA news going on out there that's very relevant to what we are doing out there. So, I tell you what.
Safety Wars is streaming now. SafetyFM.com.
I'm going to do a share screen here, as usual, because it is a government website. U.S. Department of Labor cites a Florida Petroleum Tank Services contractor after worker succumbs to injuries from exposure to toxic chemicals. The U.S. Department of Labor has cited a Lando Lakes face petroleum tank. I thought that was a butter. Lando Lakes based petroleum tank services contractor for exposing workers to chemical and respiratory hazards after an employee was fatally exposed to benzene and toluene when they entered a fuel storage tank at the Lake Worth site in July 2025. So that happened in July. Okay, that's how many months? August, September, October, November, December, January. They're supposed to have this out in January. Why are they releasing it here? Because you know why? They have 6 months to complete an investigation here. Investigators probably, you know what it was? The shutdown with this. Investigators of the department's OSHA cited PCE Petroleum Contractors Enterprises for 12 serious violations for failing to develop and implement a written permit required confined space entry program. Ensure those authorized to enter knew the hazards and signs or symptoms of exposure. The agency also cited the employer for allowing employees to enter a confined space without an atmospheric evaluation or required permit, not having a written respiratory program for workers required to wear full-face respirators, and not implementing a hazard communication program when exposed to chemicals. OSHA proposed $60,242 in penalties. So here is a question for you. A person died here. $60,242 for 12 serious violations? I don't know. What's the context there? Well, that's my question is with this. So benzene and toluene with that. Now, what do you need for a permit required confined space? You need a whole bunch of stuff. Written program, need evaluations, need air monitoring, or air sampling, depending on what you're doing. You need a rescue plan. You need training. You need a lot of different things for this. First thing you have to do is decide what you are going to do, whether you are going to be doing work in the general industry or construction. Construction, for the worker, really doesn't impact. You need continuous monitoring, things of that nature. Remember, you're seriously right with construction. However, they are different. You also need, in construction, a competent person. You need some other roles identified in there. They're not the same. People assume they're the same. The other thing, and this is what will trip you up on training. If you're a maintenance contractor, did you get the construction stuff? If you're a construction contractor, did you only have training in general industry? Because then they could get you for a training violation. That is why normally what I do when a client calls me up for training, I'm going to say, well, what are you doing? Are you construction or maintenance? More times than not, the companies do a combination of work. So, for example, you are doing a above-ground storage tank, right? An above-ground storage tank needs to be recertified, needs to be checked out every so often, every so many years, depending on your jurisdiction. It defines how many years it is, and permits, things of that nature, wear and tear, incident, what have you. There's a lot of factors that go into that. Now, a company goes in there, and they go and they try to clean out the tank. They're cleaning the tank because it's going to be inspected. 1910 or 1926 work, 1910 work. How about if you're going to go in there and you have some mill scale? You're going to have mill scale, meaning you have a little grime, dirt, corrosion, what have you, on that tank. And it's going to be an abrasive blast, what they call a brush blast up here in the Northeast, or an inspection blast everywhere else. Well, guess what? You're going over everything with an abrasive blasting machine. What they used to call sand, pardon me, aye, aye, aye. Happens every time, hiccups. The inspection blast where you're very quickly going over things just to knock off the mill scale. You're not removing any coatings or anything like that on there. In the tank, guess what? 1910. You go in there and you do the inspection, 1910. The inspectors say, hey, we have to start maintaining this. We have this problem here, that problem there. And they have all different types of instrumentation and visual surveys that go into that. Then, and you might also at this point get a certified gas-free situation if you're at a marine terminal with a marine chemist. And that might get into here with some things, right? Some usually not, but sometimes, you know, it depends on your context. And you go, they go because you're trying to document what's in there, blah, 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 atmospheric hazards. You go in there, and it doesn't happen too often, but I have seen it happen. You go, now all of a sudden, you start to go to abrasive blasting. Guess what? Now you are a construction. 1926, 1200 standards on that. And different one, now it's a very lengthy checklist, a very lengthy thing, where before you only had to do so much, now you're doing something else, you're doing a different assessment, who's involved in that, because under the old scheme, before 2015, the year, you used to have a situation with some oil terminals out there. It used to be, well, you guys are the experts. We don't know nothing about that there above-ground storage tank that we've been operating for 35 or 40 years or 100 years. But we don't know anything about confined space entry. So we're dumping it on you to manage. And we, our name, we'll call it the Muffin Oil Storage Place. So the, our name is Muffin. We don't know nothing. They end up going out, all right, and they know nothing. Right, they say we know nothing, and then no training, no, and you're in there trying to work, do your thing on the inside of the tank. Of course, these guys are coming into the tank, always men, coming into the tank, and they're looking. Oh, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? And it's like, dude, get out of here. Well, you know, we're the client. It's our tank. We could do whatever we want. And those were the kinds of conversations that happened. Yeah, you have an attendant there. The person's like pushing the attendant aside, especially if you're in the middle of nowhere. Nowheresville. Out of the metro New York, LA, and Chicago area, and Austin, and Texas area. I mean, it's like literally the Old West in many ways. And what happened was in 2015 with the construction standards, what they did was now everybody has a role, including the host employer. Now, under the multi-employer job site standard, right, with the policy, I should say, could, under the old thing, the oil terminal get cited? Yeah, they could get cited. They could sue. They could do whatever. And number one, rarely happened. Now, under the new thing, everybody has a role to play in that, which is a good thing. And now you've repaired the tank, you did the abrasive blasting, right? That's 1926. Now you want to paint the tank. What do you think that is? You paint the tank, now that's construction. Jim, that's construction? Yeah. So construction includes not only construction, but it also includes a lot of things, but it also includes demolition, it also includes painting and decorating. Now let's go into our next scenario. You are set up, your boss tells you, hey, Jimmy, I'm an office worker, and they say, hey, Jimmy, you're going to put up a Christmas tree. You're a nice, tall guy. You could go up there. You're over 6 foot. You're going to put that nice star on top of the tree, or in my case, a Star Trek ornament on top of that tree. And they say, now, you go and you do it. Now, what am I under OSHA? I'm decorating, so therefore it's construction. I have to meet the construction regulations with that. You want to put up a couple of balloons? That's general industry. No one's going to really say anything. You start putting up big displays and everything else, construction standards. How does this play out? I know of an organization that was doing an event. They said, you know, we don't want to go out and hire anybody to do the event. No, we have these event companies. They go out there. We don't want to do it. We want to do it internal. And the person who was in charge of stuff went to a Safety Wars event and said, hold on now. We're not construction workers. We cannot do all this decorating and putting up this and that, and I can't do that. And her boss says, oh, why is that? I said, OSHA considers that construction work, and we're not set up to do construction work. By the way, we don't have the insurance to do construction work. One of these people get hurt, our liability goes all the way up, especially if there is a problem. Right? So, okay, how do you know that? It's because I attended a Safety Wars training. And you could too, 845-269-5772 or jim@safetywars.com. OSHA has a rather significant update. It's one of those pains in the neck out there. Oh, I don't know when they rolled this out. It's in the last week or so. Right? OSHA, here we go. OSHA Cares Job Safety and Health Workplace Poster. The OSHA Job Safety and Health Workplace Poster tells workers their rights under the Occupational Safety and Health Act. This poster is free from OSHA. Do not pay a third-party vendor for it. So you can download it. You can order it from the government printing office. Employers must display the poster in the workplace where workers can easily see it. Languages other than English and Spanish are available. See other languages below. Employers do not need to replace previous versions of this poster. It is okay to display an old version of the poster. I actually had my projects go out there and print out the new poster, put it up there. So that way, if you get a visit from OSHA, well, you can say, look, we updated our poster. Aren't we good? Aren't we safe with that? Okay, and if you are in a state with an OSHA-approved state plan, there may be a state version of this poster. What does this say? As I'm putting it up in landscape format, right? We have it on the share screen. As an employee, OSHA Cares. As an employee, you have the right to a safe and safe workplace. Speak up about safety and health concerns without retaliation. That's whistleblower protection. Report an injury or illness. Training in a manner you understand. So in other words, understand your audience if you're a trainer. Be provided required safety equipment up to a point, right? Safety glasses that are prescription and safety-toed shoes, maybe not so. You got to check. Request an OSHA inspection and speak with the inspector. File a complaint with OSHA about workplace hazards. Free safety health compliance assistance from OSHA at any time. And, right, OSHA cares that you go home safe. Call us at 800-321-OSHA or visit osha.gov/workers, and they give you a nice QR code on there. So you have to keep the old one. You can, or you can go with the new one. What they don't tell you here, right, let's get out the general duty clause. Let me look that up here for you. All right, so that's the worker right, right? OSHA OSHA general duty clause. Here we have OSHACT, Occupational Safety and Health Act of 1970. Each employer shall furnish to each of his employees employment and a place of employment which are free from recognized hazards that are causing or likely to cause death or serious physical harm to his employees. And number two, shall comply with OSHA standards, Occupational Safety and Health Standards promulgated under this act. All right, and that's where that poster ends. The reality, What else does this poster say? What else does the general duty clause say? Each employee, let me zoom in on this. Each employee shall comply with occupational safety and health standards and all rules, regulations, and orders issued pursuant to this act, which are applicable to his own actions and conduct. Well, we're not going to go into a whole general duty clause thing, but remember, you're an employer, right? Your employees have to comply. And OSHA tells you that you have to manage your employees with that, right? So that's what we'll say on that. We're going to go to our first commercial break, and we will come back.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War Show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Polzel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars with your host, Jim Polzel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
Yes, that's what we're doing. We're here to face the harsh reality of things. And we're here to tell you, safety professionals, get off your knees.
Steel toe boots by the job site gate, clipboard heavy with a weight of fate. Just sign it, don't slow us down. Don't make waves, don't shut it down.
This was the Jay Allen monologue this morning. Pay for work doesn't protect you.
A hard hat crack tells the truth, no lie. Somebody rushed, somebody waved it by. They call us overhead, call us a cost, but they never count what a life would have cost. Safety professionals, get off your knees. We weren't hired to beg, we were hired to lead. No more rubber stamps, no silent pleas. This job was built on accountability. Stand up straight, say what you see. Safety professionals,
get off your knees. Don't live your life on your knees. Be bold. Be proud. Be knowledgeable. Be confident. Remember, you're out there saving lives, reducing injuries, in some cases preventing injuries, helping people, coaching along, being a leader. That's all what it's about. Get off your knees. Go out there and do something. This hits a little bit closer to home. You're with us. I know this company to be a very good company. I'm actually surprised that something like this would happen with this. EPA enforcement action brings SafetyClean systems incorporated into compliance at its Linden, New Jersey facility. The U.S. EPA has reached a settlement with SafetyClean Systems Incorporated, which has resulted in the company's compliance with hazardous waste laws at its facility in Linden, New Jersey. EPA found several violations, including improper maintenance, equipment malfunctions, and faulty storage, which violated regulations and posed a threat to human health and the environment. Settlement documents, SafetyClean's return to compliance, and the company's agreement to pay a penalty of $175,000. EPA worked with the company and SafetyClean, and SafetyClean has repaired and upgraded equipment and improved labeling and handling procedures, which reduces the risk to workers and the community from facility operations. This settlement is just one example of EPA's commitment to protect human health and the environment by ensuring that companies comply with hazardous waste regulations for tanks and containers. EPA Regional Administrator Michael Martucci, at the fundamental level, properly handling hazardous waste helps us prevent sites needing future cleanup and upholds the safety of our communities. This happened in 2024, so this is long time to get this resolved. During a 2024 inspection, EPA found several problems at the Linden facility. The backup containment structures that are supposed to catch the hazardous waste leaking from tanks or containers had cracks and gaps. Leaking pumps were not fixed on time, and some were not tagged for repair. Equipment was leaking and pipes were not properly sealed, which greatly increased the risk of releasing volatile organic compounds, harmful chemical vapors, into the air. Facility lacked proper labels on equipment and used the wrong types of containers to store waste. These are all very de minimis things, I'll add with this. So this surprises me. Following the inspection, Safety-Kleen improved its hazardous waste management practices. This includes upgrading containment measures to prevent leaks and using the correct containers to transport waste. Additionally, Safety-Kleen held training classes for maintenance staff and site leadership on compliance with the above described requirements. I don't know what led to something like that. Like I said, I'm actually surprised this is actually a facility I'm a little bit familiar with here on this. Now, have you ever had problems with your data that you generate in the field? We've all heard of the stories over the years. Well, such and such a company did blah, 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 and their data was fouled up, but nobody ever caught it, right? Well, that's usual. Or it was a little tiny thing. Here we have another headline here to dispel that, and it's on a situation that we're very familiar with. If you're a longtime listener here on Safety Wars, with this, right, we've covered this extensively here, and that is Trump EPA takes action after uncovering government subcontractor analysts altering measurements in East Palestine train derailment cleanup. EPA validated testing shows no new groundwater contamination or threat to public health. So they go through a whole validation practice where they go through all of this stuff, line by line in some cases, to try to resolve, to find out what the hell is going on. So this is from yesterday. Today, US EPA sent a notice to Tetra Tech Incorporated detailing the failure of a subcontractor, ALS Houston, to meet data quality standards and groundwater sampling conducted at the East Palestine train derailment site in the fall of 2025. Rigorous and ongoing validating analysis confirms there is no ongoing exposure to toxic chemicals from the derailment endangering the public health or environment in East Palestine or Palestine. Transparency and gold standard signs drive all EPA's actions, and the agency has strict protocols in place to identify inconsistencies, fix problems, and ensure the public receives accurate health and safety information. In September 2025, as part of the quality assurance and quality control processes, EPA identified potential discrepancies in groundwater sampling data from the government's contractor for 2-butoxyethanol, a colorless solvent used in household cleaners, paints, varnishes, and paint strippers. With a steadfast commitment to ensuring that the public has accurate, actionable data and information, the agency immediately launched an investigation. EPA found that the results analyzed by the government subcontractor showed the presence of 2-butoxyethanol that did not match the results from split sampling. Again, what is split sampling? So there's a couple of different quality control things that you could do. One of them, so if you're involved in industrial hygiene, you're familiar with the field blank. You're also familiar with duplicate sampling, where let's say you have an employee wear 2 air sampling devices. That we've done that before. That's duplicate sampling. More commonly with area sampling, which is not industrial hygiene sampling per se. You can't really use it for worker protection, except in extremely very limited circumstances. And you had better make damn sure that you meet those circumstances. I'm not going to mention them here. You got to wear the sample pumps, right? Well, according to the tech manual so I would suggest you do. So you have duplicate samples where you take one sample and another sample. Maybe you send them to the same lab. Maybe you don't with that. Here we have, here with this, let me start this again here, was a steadfast commitment to ensure that public has accurate and actionable data and information. The agency immediately launched an investigation. EPA found the results analyzed by the government subcontractor showed the presence of 2-butoxyethanol that did not match results from split sampling testing at other labs. So what they did was they took a sample, right, a soil sample, a water sample, and they sent one sample to one lab and one to the other lab from the same location, from the same medium, from the same source. Under EPA's oversight and extensive confirmatory testing, in February 2026, EPA's contractor, Tetra Tech, notified the agency that ALS Houston had, in fact, altered measurements, which resulted in false sampling data. How do you alter measurements? Many, many, many different ways to alter measurements here. As a result, terminated two analysts for failure to follow standard operating procedures. Because of EPA's investigation and quick action, none of the falsified data was used to make any health, safety, cleanup, or enforcement decisions at the site. Past and current data indicate there is no risk to groundwater from 2-butoxyethanol in East Palestine. This is a quote from Lee Zeldin. The Trump EPA has never stopped fighting for the East Palestine community and those impacted by this disaster. My first trip after being sworn in as EPA administrator was to visit East Palestine alongside Vice President Vance. I'm going to add to this, the former administration, the Biden administration, were not out there doing this immediately here, and it's cost a lot of credibility to this. And I tell you what, a lot of these, I'm going to make an assumption here, or a generalization. A lot of these rural communities already have either an adversarial relationship or they politically do not like the EPA. And the fact that if you're dealing with someone who does not like you, you try to do the right thing by them. Does that make sense? Because what happens, right, here? You have situations like this where hey, we cannot trust the EPA because of global warming policy, things of that nature. Is what I'm not saying that. I'm just saying this is what people are thinking often. And now they come out to my community and they pull a fast one. And this is like undermines the authority, the credibility, and the likability for the EPA. Because I tell you what, if you were a private consultant doing this, you'd probably be decredentialed. You might have other issues going on. Now, you know, when you find out these issues, you have to go and you have to do what they did here. You got to follow it up. My first trip after being sworn as EPA administrator was to visit East Palestine. So they went there because the previous administration dragged their feet on here with this. EPA does not stand for analysts altering measurements. We are investigating the actions of the subcontractor to the fullest extent of the law. Right? So basically, falsifying these results, maybe a criminal act here. My team is working swiftly, transparently, and efficiently to redouble all our efforts to ensure that no one can ever do something like this again. Guess what, Lee? It's going to happen again. You got to be very vigilant here. Nobody is out there. Now this is a high profile. Let's talk about this also. This is a high profile job. Everybody is going to be looking at it. We know that. The community is concerned. We made international headlines. We talked about this for 4 hours on Coast to Coast AM. Here with this, right, one of the largest radio platforms in the world. We talked about, you know, and everything else. We talked about this with the New American Magazine. So we got the New American Magazine covered this story with us here, with an interview with us. And what am I saying? Everyone's looking at this. Why would you do this? Why would you go out there and falsify results, play shenanigans? I don't get it. oh, I know everything's going to, I know everybody's going to be watching, so I'm going to go out there and play games with this, allegedly. Again, it's all alleged. I don't know what exactly, no, I'm going off the press release here. Why would you do that? Now, this is a high-profile job, and this might have gotten by them. Because now they're going to go back and look at all the other sampling that they did, if they haven't already, and say, are these two analysts out there, were they involved in everything else, or is this the only time? Because I tell you what, if they were involved in other things, and they were always sampling out here, guess what? Maybe they're you got to look at everything. We all have heard stories with industrial hygiene over the years. Oh, yeah. And I'm just skirting ethics, sharing this with you. But I'm going to share it with you anyway. I don't like to talk about the way you falsify sample results. So let's talk about industrial hygiene. How do we falsify sample results? One, wrong analytical method. Are what you're sampling for actually what's there? And do you know that? That's number one. So you know that you're number two. Here, wear this air sampling pump. I ain't effing wearing that air sampling pump. So what do? They take that air sampling pump. Oh, okay, I'm not going to wear it because, of course, safety professionals live on their knees often. Oh, okay, we're not going to wear it. Blah, blah, blah. From the worker, I'm not wearing that pump because if it shows that I got high, whatever, then I got to wear a respirator. I don't want to wear a respirator. I've heard that. What's another one? Oh, yeah, we ran air samples. Where do they run the air samples? They keep the pumps in the office running and everybody else is out there working. How about for air sampling with industrial hygiene out in the field? Oh, you're working over there. That's the highest exposure. Well, guess what? We're going to run the samples over here on the lowest exposure people. And therefore, we're going to make our decisions on the lowest potential exposure, not on what the highest are. And those are just some ways. Statistically, I'm not a statistician per se. But how about if you're running hundreds of samples? You got a multi-year project. You have to come up with a statistician to run this stuff or someone who knows statistics to run this stuff. Make sure you're getting everything. You know what? We're doing this. We're just not going to sample. We're going to use sample data from another job that may or may not apply to this. Usually, no, if you want to F around, it doesn't apply to it. All this stuff goes on, and guess what? It never gets caught. Why? Why does it ever get caught? Ethics. People don't have a lot of ethics, number one. Number two, how many safety people actually know how to do an industrial hygiene survey? You're supposed to know that. If you're working on a construction site, you're a safety professional, you're supposed to know a little bit something about industrial hygiene. You're out at a manufacturing facility, you know you're supposed to be, you might know a little bit something. But how many of these safety professionals do actually get a continuing ed and know what they're doing with that? So they hire people that don't know what they're doing and who don't care. Too clueless to care, right? I have a song that I'll be sharing with that. Right? So here we have, I know it's a rant, but too bad. EPA has zero tolerance for shortcuts by a lab that could result in inaccurate data and has taken the following actions to remedy this situation. Right, we're at 46 minutes after the hour. Opened an investigation into sampling discrepancies and expanded its own rigorous quality assurance and control process. Rejected data submitted by the subcontractor, ALS Houston. Referred the data quality issues to EPA's Office of Inspector General. Issued a cure notice to the prime, I don't know what a cure notice is, to the prime contractor, along with a review of all active contracts with a subcontractor with an eye towards sample. I'm going to run that through AI real quick. Review internal contracting processes to identify institutional controls for the agency's contract team to ensure the situation does not happen again. updated and will continue to update in its East Palestine website to ensure that the public has access to the most up-to-date info. In addition, EPA is considering all avenues for action as the agency takes very seriously the obligations of government contractors to uphold the terms of contracts and applicable laws. For additional information, click here. What do we got here? Right, that's the... Maybe we'll do a really deep dive into the data,
right,
with that. In September 2025, as soon as EPA Region 5 office discovered a data discrepancy, the agency opened an investigation. At that time, the agency held all data from ALS Houston and ordered the prime contractor, Tetra Tech, to perform additional data validation on data from August, September, and October. In December 2025, after finding more discrepancies, the agency sent additional samples to EPA's Phyllis Laboratory, which I know to be a very, very competent laboratory there with that. EPA's testing confirmed that there was no 2-butoxyethanol and there was no risk to the public or environment. In January 2026, EPA sent additional August to October samples to the Phyllis Lab. I mean, what are the holding times on this? Right? 2 months later? Right? Yeah. 4 months later? Wow. All right. All tests at other labs confirmed there were no 2-butoxyethanol in the samples. The agency's investigation continued in February 2026. And Tetra Tech notified EPA and ALS Houston had altered measurements and terminated 2 data analysts for failing to follow laboratory standard operating procedures with this. Why would they have done that? I don't know. I can't. But how... What have I seen in the industrial hygiene world and my world that I've had for 33 years? I've seen people spike samples, yeah. I've been told to spike samples or dilute samples. Never did it. But I've been, oh, yeah, well, no, we're not doing that. Find another person. Oh, yeah. Perhaps they were motivated by something. I don't know what the situation was here with that. I'm sure we'll hear more about this because if there's a criminal procedure, you've heard it, criminal action, well, you've heard it here first on this show. So let's run that through AI. What is a cure? Hold on, I'm going to, this is the handy thing. This is from ChatGPT. A cure notice, I had never heard of this. What's this? It's a formal written notice that someone has violated a contract or agreement and is being given a chance to fix, aka cure, the problem within a specified period of time. It's very common in construction contracts, leases, employment agreements, service contracts, government contracts. Since you work a lot with construction federal projects, you're likely to see this. Right, so that's basically is it, and a secure notice here with that. A cure notice, and according to ChatGPT, in federal contracting, a cure notice is often issued before termination or default. With this, pursuant to Federal Acquisition Regulation FAR 49.607, the government considers your failure to perform a condition that endangers your performance in the contract. You are hereby notified that unless the condition is secured within 10 days, the government may terminate the contract. That is an example of language with this. Now, in the safety context, your world, this comes in, this is what's good about it, ChatGPT. A cure notice might be issued for repeated PPE violations, failure to follow EM385 safety plans, a lack of a competent person, fall protection violations, failure to correct the hazard. Often it's the last warning before removal from the site on that. Let's see this. I'm going to do this. So this is a cure notice template used on USACE projects, allegedly. Again, this is, all right. So I'm going to share the screen here. I don't know if I'm even allowed to do this on chat. GBT here. Here we have cure notice. Based on federal acquisition regulation, FAR 49.607, format used by contracting officers, you have a date, contract or address, contract number, project location, dear, blah, 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 subject, notice of cure, contract performance deficiency. You're hereby notified that the government considers your failure to do whatever, right? And they have different things with this. These deficiencies and are conditions endangering performance of the contract. Therefore, unless this condition is cured within 10 days after receipt of this invoice or within such longer period as the contracting officer determines, the government may terminate the contract for default. And that's basically it with that. Oh, God, went a little bit off the rails, but a little bit off the rails in a good way here. We're at 53 minutes after the hour. Let's see what else we have here on the EPA website. Here. And there was other stuff going on. Administrator Lee Zeldin provides public update in San Diego area on Trump administration's efforts to implement a 100% solution to Tijuana River sewage crisis. On Friday, February 27th, the U.S. EPA held a press conference at an avocado farm in Congressman Daryl Issa's district, where he provided a public update on the Trump administration efforts to permanently and urgently end Tijuana River sewage crisis. During his remarks, he outlined various progress benchmarks here. And again, previous administrations have failed to get anything done on this. Here, you can check that out with that. So they're cleaning up the Tijuana River, which is, I guess, a really good thing with that. And again, let's remember with the administrators, administrations, and everything else. Now, this is all statutory. They're going to have an EPA, and they're going to have the EPA do whatever. Just because of one issue does not necessarily mean that the EPA is bad or good or what have you. It's just the way they're managing something. The Trump administration recently abandoned the climate change stuff, right? All that, those policies. But guess what? They're doing something else here with this, the Tijuana River, something more tangible other than the intangible climate change stuff. Caused by human beings and everything else. We've covered that here on this show with Lord Christopher Monckton and several other guests. Anyway, that's all I have for tonight. So we're going to head on out to our outro and our national anthem. I got to watch a little bit of USA baseball before the program started, USA versus San Diego, baseball classic, right? The international baseball classic or whatever it's called. It's coming up this year. And hopefully my favorite players will not get injured like last time. Edwin Diaz. With that for the whole season. So we'll see how that goes. I do have the jersey from the USA Baseball. I'm probably going to wear it one of these nights. For Safety Wars and the Safety FM Network, this is Jim Posel. God willing, I will be here tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
You got into the safety business because you wanted to protect people. But somewhere along the way, the job started controlling your time, your schedule, your priorities, even your income potential. What if the expertise you've built over the years in the field can give you something more? More freedom, more control, more ownership of your future. I'm Sheldon Primus, the author of 7 Steps to Starting a Profitable Safety Consulting Business and the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast, with more than 350 episodes helping safety professionals become consultants and grow their career. Consulting changed my life. In fact, I'm a full-time RVer, and one consulting contract paid for my home I live in today. Now, I help safety professionals build their own consulting practice through bi-weekly coaching calls, accountability, and personal guidance. But this program isn't for everyone. Start with the consultant readiness audit at sheldon.coach.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy, now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion, the book that started the conversation. Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the signal. For the first time, all 3 books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition. This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live, inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.